It's my pleasure now to welcome Carsten Stendevad, who's from Bridgewater, another long-time partner in our global events. Thank you very much, Bridgewater. Carsten joined Bridgewater in 2017 and serves as the co-CIO for sustainability, overseeing Bridgewater's overall sustainable investing efforts, including the design and oversight of investment solutions with both financial and sustainability impact objectives. He's also a member of the Operating Committee and co-chairs the firm's Sustainable Investing Committee. I'm sure many of you will know Carsten also from his role previously as CEO of ATP, Denmark's National Pension Plan. Now I'd like to welcome Carsten.
Thank you.
Nice to see you, and you're joining us from Connecticut. How are things with you, Carsten?
Things are very well here. It's great to be with you.
Great. Thank you. Now, look, I want to start in a little bit of an unconventional manner when we're talking at a sustainability conference, but I want to look at the evolution of sustainable investing and perhaps to do that, look at some of the critiques that in recent weeks, there's been quite a few public criticisms of ESG investing. And I think many of those arguments need unpacking and they're worth addressing. There's been a long article I'm sure many people have seen by Tarek Fancy, who's the former head of sustainability investing at BlackRock. There's a more succinct critique on the back of Tarek's article from Robert Armstrong in the Financial Times, and both of those articles are on our content hub. And so some of those arguments put forward have been discussed many times in ESG. So, you know, why should corporate CEOs be responsible for the world's problems, and divestment doesn't really work? But I'm interested in unpacking some of the others and some of these and other critiques, Carsten, with the idea that looking at critiques actually helps us to address some of the kind of fuzzy problems perhaps that are around ESG and could be potentially a catalyst for the industry to actually become more focused around processes and behaviours and intentions. So with that, what are your observations of the critiques that you've seen in recent weeks and over many years, I'm sure, that you've been doing this? Can you give us a summary of what you think, you know, some of the important lessons from those criticisms have been?
Well, absolutely. You know, here at Bridgewater, we love negative feedback. So I really appreciate you diving straight into the current debate about the criticisms on ESG investing. Of course, there are many aspects to this debate. But to me, the two most interesting questions raised by the critics really relate to the fundamental linkages with respect to ESG investing in two regards. One is really, does ESG investing really matter for the financial performance of a portfolio? And I think the second question is, does ESG investing really have any impact? Does it really contribute to real-world sustainability outcomes? Those, I think, are the two, I think, most important questions posed by the critics. And I believe the critics are right in pointing out that too often, ESG practitioners have put forth fairly simplistic arguments on these two questions. And I really think as an industry, we would all benefit from listening to the critics, sharpen the arguments, and strengthen our approaches. If I try to unpack it a little bit, let me start with the first question around ESG and returns. You know, many ESG investors, what they will say is that the only reason why they care about ESG is because it helps them make investment decisions, it helps them boost returns or lower risk. So that leads to the question, is that really true? Does ESG issues really matter that much for returns? Many investors will say emphatically, yes. And they'll say things like ESG stocks will outperform or other such somewhat, in my mind, too simplistic statements around the linkages. I think the answer is a bit more nuanced, which is sometimes, to some degree. I mean, there are certainly cases where ESG issues are very important for the financial performance of an asset, whether it's in equities or in other asset classes. But there are also cases where the impact of ESG is more marginal. Sometimes it's even neutral. In fact, sometimes it may even be negative. And I think being very honest and analytically clear about what that impact is, I think is critical for the credibility of ESG investing. And I think in particular, a really relevant question is, what do you do in situations where taking ESG considerations into account may not actually boost returns. What if it's orthogonal? How do you deal with that? And to me, this raises the first most important assignment for anyone who cares about ESG investing, which is to be crystal clear about your investment objective. Is it really true that you only care about risk and return? Because if so, by all means, analyze all ESG issues and other relevant issues. But then in a way, the chips should fall where they fall. Like then you should really optimize for risk and return. And don't get into kind of like nutty arguments around justifying ESG decisions if they're not really leading to better returns. So either if you only care about risk and return, great, then pursue ESG in that regard. Or maybe you actually have non-financial objectives. Maybe you actually have sustainability-oriented objectives. If so, say it clearly. And I think it's especially important for asset owners to be very clear about that. Because if you're clear about that, if you're clear about what your investment objectives are, it's much easier to start to engineer portfolios to build out investment processes to account for that. So for me, at its core, I welcome this critique. And I think it really highlights, of course, many other aspects, but most importantly, for folks who do ESG investing to be crystal clear about why they're doing it, and then to be clear around what is the impact it has on portfolios and, of course, on real-world outcomes.
Thank you, Carsten. We'll get into a little bit more detail about what you're saying in a moment, but I also want to bring a guest on to have a discussion about this particular, you know, these critiques and this, you know, honing in on processes and purpose. And that's Jaap van Dam. I want to bring him into the conversation now. And Jaap is the Director of Strategy at PGGM, which is a 268 billion euro investor, the second largest pension fund in Europe, and one of the leading investors in sustainability and has been for a long time. So welcome to you, Jaap. Thank you for being here. So what's your view on you know, what the critiques are saying and what Carsten's saying in terms of, you know, these critiques can actually lead us to be better, you know, to be more focused about processes and purpose. And as part of that, should asset owners have a purpose? Should they be actually articulating what their purpose is beyond investment returns?
These are quite some questions, Amanda. So first, I think by and large, I do subscribe to Tariq's commentary on the way that we invest sustainably right now. And I tend to agree on the fact that there's a lot of naivete probably involved there, and congratulating ourselves that we are really doing a great job when it comes to being sustainable. So this is very good, but I'd like to put it in an evolutionary perspective. So I think collectively we are on a journey to improve here. And the speaker from Robeco, I think, already emphasized the fact that the urgency and the scale that we need to act on as humanity is really speeding up a lot. I think you see that reflected by the policy response that we see by many governments in the world. For example, Europe is really acting. I think I see China acting. I think I see Canada acting. And this is a spreading movement. So then probably the question is, what should we as asset owners do? And then you come up with the word purpose. And if I have conversations with different funds and boards of funds around the world, the word purpose is received sometimes better and sometimes worse. So in countries where fiduciary duty in the strict sense is very important, let's say the US, let's say also the UK to a certain extent, there people will tend to say, well, yes, we like what you say, but let's be very careful here, because before you know, we are outside of our fiduciary duty. And I think this is also part of Tariq's commentary. If the system doesn't move, we have limited, as asset owners, asset managers, limited space to move. If I look at continental Europe, I think there's actually movement in the idea that purpose does matter for asset owners. And also that I would like to formulate as a continuum. So why don't we start saying, okay, we used to be 100% risk return, so two-dimensional. And why don't we add a little weighting to the purpose, to the impact side? So let's make it 95-5 or 90-10, and let's see what happens to our portfolios. And then I think that will give a lot of good experience and things to think about when going further. But I fully agree to Carsten when he says boards, asset owners should be crystal clear about what they're trying to achieve, what their objective is. Otherwise, you will get all these very difficult conversations about ESG and impact, etc.
So let's assume that happens and an investor is very, very clear about moving from 2D to 3D and they want to have this 3D being impact, risk and return. How do you do that? How do you build that investment discipline? Carsten, let's start with you.
Well, first of all, I think that is such an important first step to have done. And I think I see more and more institutional investors doing it. I think, of course, Jaap is a great leader in this world, but we really see it around the world. If you think about all the net zero commitments that are being made, they effectively are examples of elevating impact alongside returns. After all, and asset owners are not saying we will take a net zero commitment as long as it improves our financial returns. They're saying we are taking a net zero commitment, full stop. So once you've done that, to me, it really means you have to fundamentally rethink your investment processes because you now have this new dimension of impact. And just like we've spent decades building out our understanding of risk, this is the kind of the second dimension, risk and return, we now have to build out our entire investment processes in terms of, so we're able to capture and measure and manage the impact dimension. So very concretely, but I think what it means is building out investment processes that go all the way through the entire investment process from the data collection to the investment logic relating to impact, to the portfolio construction relating to impact, and ultimately to the portfolio construction where you then try to balance these three considerations, risk, return, and impact. And I can just speak from personal experience. Here at Bridgewater, we've committed to this journey. Of course, it's new for all investors, and it's a big task. We've spent several years building out all of our systems to really try to integrate and build out this new dimension. And only, I think, when you've done that, can you really even start to answer this question around, well, what about returns? And actually, one of the personal lessons I've learned being on this journey for more than a decade is it's important sometimes not to have too many preconceived notions and too many theoretical arguments around what is possible and what is not possible. At least what I've learned is sometimes you just got to do the work. Do the work of building out the investment processes, really understanding impact in as diligent a way as possible. Spend the time putting together the portfolios you think are the best possible from a 3D perspective. And once you've done that work, then in a way you can be in a position to start answering, hey, can I actually deliver great returns? So anyway, don't do it upfront based on your hypotheses. Do the work and then see what's possible. And I think if you're very clear on your objectives and you apply your best investment thinking to the challenge, I actually think it's possible to build great portfolios that deliver both on great risk-adjusted returns and also deliver on the impact dimension.
Yep, you've been involved with the strategy at PGGM for many years, famously the White Sheet of Paper project a few years ago, and now I believe setting the strategy for the next 5 years as well. How do you incorporate this 3D element of impact into an asset owner's strategy and investment beliefs and implementation?
Yeah. Do you want me to be honest here or tell a nice story? I guess the first one, don't you? So I tend to agree a lot with Carsten here. I think you are right in calling us on the forefront of implementing impact investing and ESG investing. But still, if you look at our investment process, to a certain extent, investing sustainably comes as an afterthought after having set the whole strategic asset allocation, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not the first and foremost thing that comes to mind when we're building portfolios. It's something that you apply after you have, by and large, designed your portfolios. And I think that that is something that that really has to change. Perhaps we will get into a question later. What do we mean by impact when we say impact? But right now, I think, for example, in our investment strategy 2025, we have the objective of investing 20% of our assets aligned with the SDGs. So that is substantial. And I think we cannot go a lot further if we wanted to by using the methods and the way we construct portfolios as we have historically. So this is one of the arguments why I look with enthusiasm at what Bridgewater is pioneering when it comes to 3D investing. The other element of the conversation I'd like to hit on is, so we do allocate 20% of our assets to SDGs, yes, capital allocated. But what's the difference this capital actually makes in the world? What is our role in changing this world for a better way? And then we probably enter into the realm of different shades of impact.
Yeah, well, let's unpack that a little bit. You have alluded to it and love both of your comments on this. So, Carsten, you've talked before about impact investing being a kind of multidimensional, very broad spectrum that, you know, includes things like timeframes and illiquid versus illiquid assets. What benefit is that type of framework in looking at how you invest sustainably? Can you explain that to us a little bit more?
Yes. For me, it's the idea that impact is really a dimension. Like just like risk is there, it's a dimension. Impact is also a dimension. So it's not a yes, no. And what that means on that spectrum is if you think about how that whole spectrum works out, all types of capital can be placed somewhere on that impact spectrum. If you go to, let's say, the far end of impact would be an investment where you could demonstrate that in additionality, in other words, if not for you, this investment would not have happened, and causality, in other words, this particular investment has had a real world outcome. That is a very, very high bar for what it means. If you look at the work of the World Bank or the IFC, operating sometimes in places where the financial markets are outside of the reach of the private capital markets, that is what they strive for, and even there it can be difficult. But it's interesting to think about that as a North Star. And then you think about all the different types of capital. For example, there's certain type of VC capital, let's say focused on green tech, where actually if those green tech innovations come through, yes, you could show a causality. But I think it's very, when we think about this spectrum, what is dangerous is to think, well, only if you're at the far end of the spectrum does it make a difference. The reality is that to reach a sustainable future, we know that the entire system has to tilt towards sustainability. And what that means is you need public capital, liquid markets, you need bank capital, you need private capital, you need VC capital. You kind of need the whole financial system to tilt towards it. And we need all types of capital because it's not just high-risk capital that is needed. Think about infrastructure, the whole move to a decarbonized world. It will take trillions of dollars of capital, some of it high risk, some of it low risk. And so you really need the whole entire spectrum of assets to move towards it. And public capital can play a different role from private capital. It is true that certain types of private capital, especially when it gets to, like they say, smaller companies where you really have direct control of an asset, of the management, et cetera, investors can have a particular influence. But I think it's really important to say that it's not an either or, it's a spectrum. All types of capital can play a role. There's another important aspect, which is time. And that is the idea that, for example, in public markets, you can choose to support companies that are sustainable today. That's very important. Or you can also choose to support companies that are on a sustainability journey, actually that are not so sustainable today, but are moving towards it. But I think, again, we need to be very analytically clear and honest about which one do we do and what are the risks associated with it. For example, if you invest in a company that is not sustainable today and you're just praying, I hope these guys will get sustainable, that's not good enough in my mind. Because if you allocate capital to a company that's not sustainable, you are making a bet that they can improve. And so therefore, I think as an investor, if you do that, you really have to make sure as an active owner that they get on this journey. And other types of capital, if you invest in a company that is already sustainable today, in a way, you're taking a little bit less sustainability risk because the company is already there. My main point is to say that I think all types of capital, private and public, if you really think through this impact dimension and you think about how does it impact me, how can I change my investment processes to tilt into to impact, I think that is what's needed for more sustainable outcome for the world.
Does this language resonate with you, Jaap, this kind of narrative of the way you're thinking about impact now at PGGM?
More and more. Two elements here. So the conversation we're having right now is, so sometimes we, let's say we buy impact, or in other ways, we back with our capital the impact which is produced by someone else, but we also feel that we should put more effort in actually creating. So it's in a certain sense a make or buy continuum, and this is again an enormous journey. How do you actually create impact? How do you change existing capital to become more sustainable capital? And the other thing, the other element I would like to delve a bit into is Carsten, you in your narrative, that might suggest that you are talking about allocating less or more. And I think the allocation dimension is one perspective when you think about impact, when you think about sustainability. The actual interaction you have with the capital owner is another one. So then we're talking engagement, probably if done collectively, or stewardship if done individually. And I think by and large, as asset owners and as investment management industry, we are very much under investing in this way of really changing the companies in whose capital we invest. So this is also a very big theme for us going forward.
Yes, and if I could add to that, I think you're absolutely right that active engagement with companies is very important. I think, in fact, investors can even broaden the notion of what it means to have active engagement beyond just the companies you're invested in. Obviously, that's important, but to the other parts of the financial system that you touch. I'll give you one example. The way we invest at Bridgewater, it's a very fundamental and systematic way of doing it. We rely a lot on different sources of data. So it's very important for us to support the ecosystem, a data ecosystem that's emerging around sustainability data. A lot has happened already, which is good, but much more needs to happen. So for example, I view it as an area where we really can engage with the data companies, not just criticize them, but engage and say, work with them to figure out how can we improve the data? How can we create data that is done in a form that actually will feed in or be able to be used in our investment systems? And I think there's lots of areas in the world of sustainability. Take the issue of modern slavery. It's a very important topic around the world. It has linkages both to green investing and to many other topics. It's an area where people can agree that it's important, but the data is very bad. So if an investor has to take that into account, we need to engage not just with data providers, but also with NGOs and others to see collectively, how can we improve our understanding of this topic? I would view that as a great example of kind of collective engagement in the financial community that I think certainly I'm excited about, and I think will lead to, is like an example of a public good that all investors can then use.
So, Carsten, with everything that we've said on this panel, you know, given that our listeners and our delegates at this conference are large institutional investors, is impact investing something that can be done at scale?
Yes, I think it can be done at scale, and I think it must be done at scale. Personally, I have no interest in small niche demonstration portfolios in a small part of a portfolio that you can talk about in a conference like this or at a cocktail party. I don't think it makes any difference. I think the real question is, how do you actually move the entire financial system? And this is why I think it's so important that when we think about this impact, that we think about this notion of the impact spectrum, and we think about how each type of capital that we're involved in, how can you tilt it? So it means not just equities, it means equities, it means fixed income. Let's think about commodities and how exposures to commodities, how that can be done in a sustainable way. You really think about all types of capital. Ultimately, when you start pursuing this, let's call it total portfolio approach to 3D investing, I think it's difficult, I think it's exciting, but ultimately I think that is what's needed for a sustainable future. And I think it's possible.
We've got a question from our audience, from Roger Irwin, from Willis Towers Watson, who I'm sure you both know. Doesn't the 3D mandate need to keep score on return and impact in parallel and integrated ways, not optimized ways? Are we trying to be too quantitative? Who'd like to have a turn at that? Carsten.
So the way I think about the question is, when we say 3D, we almost imagine this cube where the axes are completely orthogonal. And I think the question here really is saying it's not always orthogonal. In fact, sometimes the impact dimension can support returns. And so I think you're absolutely right that we should be analytically clear about that and say there are certain circumstances where, yes, in fact, integrating ESG and thinking about the impact dimension may contribute to returns. And that, of course, is the best of all worlds. My main point is to say it's not always the case. And sometimes it is orthogonal. It might sometimes even be going in opposite directions. And we should just be clear on which one that it is. But certainly, if you can find an investment that creates great returns while also delivering impact, I mean, that's, of course, the best of all worlds, and we should certainly pursue those ones. But I think it's also relevant to think about how, again, the overall capital can be tilted towards impact, even if there's not a direct positive impact on returns. And there the key point is that if you build out your portfolio construction capabilities well enough, I think it's possible to put together portfolios where you really can deliver on all these dimensions, where you don't have a return give up of any significant magnitude.
Yaap, would you like to comment on Roger's question?
Can I jump in? In general, I think we are probably, as an industry, we have a bit over-engineered our portfolios and trusted model outcomes a bit too much, and sometimes this model reality replaces our view on the actual fundamental reality behind that reality. So I'm trying to, but all these toolboxes with their outcomes, with their guidings of how to construct a good portfolio in all three dimensions are extremely valuable. But I'd like to supplement it with careful thinking and understanding of the world behind it, and also having a vision on what a sustainable world would look like. And for example, the SDGs help us to think about that, I think.
We've got time for one last comment, and I just want to ask a little bit cheeky, but this is the very beginning of our journey for this sustainability conference. We've got lots of sessions coming up. What would you recommend that investors listen for in the coming sessions? What should they, and that goes for any conversation they're having about sustainability, how should they be listening for what people are saying? Carsten, start with you.
Well, I would suggest you start by listening carefully for whether people are clear on this whole 2D versus 3D? Are they clear about why they're pursuing the ESG? I think that's a very important first question to listen to.
And Yap?
I would say try to sit in the conference open-minded and question yourself and see whether during the conference you find tools or methods that can really help you doing better what you probably intend to do.
Well, Carsten, yeah, very nice to spend time with you. Thank you for your leadership and thank you for sharing your thoughts with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.